Welcome to It's Your Community with Vanessa Denha, a public affairs presentation of News Talk 760 WJR.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to It's Your Community. I'm Vanessa Denha Garmo here with Epiphany Communications and Coaching. Always a pleasure to be with you here on the Sunday morning. 79% of employees will quit due to lack of appreciation, according to new statistics. What's lacking is empathy. Scott Agnew, author of Long-Term Leaders, says the new long-term leadership approach is empathy, tenderness, understanding, and communication with a clear understanding of expectations by both leader and protege. And to talk with us about that and so much more is the author, Scott Agnew. Scott, how are you?
I'm great, Vanessa. Thanks for having me on today.
It's a pleasure.
Cool.
It's a pleasure to talk with you. And I love this topic. It's near and dear to my heart as a communications and leadership coach myself. And we know that these are alarming statistics. 79% of employees will quit due to lack of appreciation. Tell us a little bit more about that. And that's pretty alarming statistic.
Well, yeah. And I think, you know, I think like one of the key reasons the lack of appreciation shows up typically is because I think employees get to a place where they don't feel heard by their boss, or they don't feel comfortable enough to really tell the boss what's really going on, or their leader or their manager. And that is because in many instances, I think that the cues, right, that they're getting from their leader are unempathetic, more in a hurry, maybe more with a demeanor or an energy around, I don't really care what your problems are. I want you just to do your job type of message that people get. And I think it leads to, when people feel unappreciated or unheard or unsafe, I think they will, because they have, you know, people have a need for that. They need to feel safe.
Yeah.
And I think what happens is, even unconsciously, the next, you know, nice offer that comes along, they just jump on it because they may not even understand consciously what's going on. But the next offer, and you know how it is when you're being courted and recruited away, that's the honeymoon stage. That's when your recruiter makes you feel very important and very like as if they care about you. And in many cases they do. And so they will end up attracting people into other jobs because they're meeting a higher need. It's not just the need for money.
Yeah,
there is a higher need for sure.
That's a really good point. And in my experience too, and you could speak to this, weigh in on this, Scott, is that, you know, a lot of when I coach clients, they don't even know their own value. And so when you don't know your own value, you can't convey it to your bosses and present that value where you do feel appreciated. What's your take on understanding your own value and what you bring to the table?
Yeah. I think next time you're in these evaluation meetings or, you know, review meetings on how you're doing as an employee, take the time, sit down and write out all the things that you've accomplished and done and go back a year or 2 years. Okay. And just write all those things down. And when you meet with your boss or leader, you'll be surprised when and it's very simple. Before we get going, I just want to review all the things I've accomplished in my job over the last year or two. Would it be okay if I shared that with you, boss? And the boss is going to say yes, because the boss doesn't know. The boss isn't in there every day grinding it out like you are. So when you reveal these things, and it's not about bragging. It's about just opening up and laying the truth on the table of what's happened. And bosses love that. This is a way you can, in John Maxwell's words, this is a way you can lead up. Okay. Yeah. Instead of, feeling like you need to be led and managed, you can also lead and manage your boss by reviewing all the wonderful things that have happened as a result of your efforts, so that the boss has a clear understanding of what you've done. And then that can lead to raises or bonuses or increased responsibilities and all kinds of things. So that's a really good tactic if you're in a situation where you feel like maybe there's, potential, the company's good, maybe your boss is new or not a great leader, but you can actually lead them and you can bring out the best in your boss too, which is kind of cool.
Scott, you also talk about how being clear on your values will help you get to where you want to go. Can you elaborate for us on that and what you touched upon in the book, Long-Term Leader?
Yeah, values are very important that you're in alignment. And this is what helps you hire and get in business with the right people on your team. Values will, when you have an alignment in values, you don't end up having as much chaos, conflict, or consternation around, getting people to buy into the organizational goals. So it's really like a kind of a three-step process, if you will. And that is, you want to take a look at the problem. And if you share the same values, you're going to see oftentimes the same problem as your people, and they'll see the same problem you see. And then when you talk about, like, okay, what's really going on here? If you have alignment and values, you'll probably agree on what's actually going on because you'll have the same kind of perspective. Hmm. And then when you move into, okay, what are we going to do about it? What's our action step that we're going to do to solve this problem? If you have alignment and values, people will show up the same way. If a person values, let's say, being a leader, and you need people to value being a leader in your organization, even though they might be in the operations side, they might be, in customer service side, doesn't really matter, but you want people that show up as leaders on their teams and with their coworkers, right? So if they have that value already, then when you go to solve a problem around, John's coming into work late, or John isn't pulling his weight, or, whatever it might be, when you say, okay, what do you want to do about it? The person's more likely to say, well, I'll tell you what, I'll sit down with John and have a frank conversation about him, about his issues with him. And I'll be empathetic. I'll listen to him and find out if there's anything going on with him so that we can, come up with a plan that can work for John and us at the same time. Hmm. That's a person who values being a leader. If they don't value being a leader, what do you think they're going to say?
They're going
to look at you and go, well, you need to talk to him and take care of this. And you get the job back.
Yes, exactly. So why would anyone want to be a long-term leader, and how would they reach the quote unquote gold standard of leadership? What does that look like?
Well, can I just equate it to marriage?
Sure.
Yeah. So, the first years of my marriage were tough because I was still single in my mind, and I was married. We had started, in the second year we had our first child, and then we ended up having three children, and I was working like crazy. I used to pace the floor at night at 3 a.m. at my house, trying to solve problems, all this stuff. And I just, I was very unavailable as a family man in my early years. And those were the toughest years. And then as our kids grew and they became more independent and became more, they were more like contributors, if you would, to the family rather than just, stuff we had to keep doing for them. And as that grew, my wife and I were able to, really get to know each other. And as we really got to know each other, we discovered we really liked each other and we really had a good time with each other and we really loved and cared for each other and we appreciate each other. Well, that didn't happen instantly. That happened, there's the initial attraction, there's the honeymoon, and then there's raising the family. And so business is like that too. You start a project, you start a business, it's chaos, you're going nuts. And if you're a long-term leader, you get to savor what's on the other side of that, which is a team that's been with you for years, that trusts you, that, when you say, hey guys, we're going to do this, they go, yep, okay, let's go do it. Because you've been with them so long, they just have this inherent deep level of trust, and they don't have many questions. They don't question you because they know that you've heard them and you're going to take them in the right direction. And they know that you're looking around the corner, and they also know that you have their best interest at heart too. It's not just about them, making you rich, right? It's also about creating fulfilling lives. And this is what happened in my marriage, on the other side of all that chaos of raising a family, you get to reach those golden years where you get to savor the real fruits, right, of all that work and all that learning that you did. So in long, in a long-term leadership, the way it breaks down, the longer term, the longer you're a leader and an effective leader, and you can have a team around you that has been, you know, been doing what you need them to do for a while, that leads to much higher profitability, much higher stability, and it gives you the opportunities to seek, it gives you the opportunity to seek other opportunities. And you can do it again and again and again, because the principles of long-term leadership apply to no matter how many businesses you own or how many entities you run.
I want to get into your background in a few minutes. Can you tell us first how to get the book before I forget to ask you that? How do we get the book, Long-Term Leader?
Sure. Just look it up, longtermleader.com. And you will get a free gift on, you know, 10 mistakes leaders make. And then if you like that, you can go, you know, it's, it'll show you how to get the book.
And Scott, you talk about in the book, why managing tasks instead of leading with a clear vision is a mistake. Tell us the difference between that.
Sure. When you, when you're just managing tasks, what happens is it doesn't lend itself to what the priorities are. It's more like a to-do list. And what, you know, if you really want to be effective, you've got to make sure that what's on that list are your, you know, those are the top 10% or 20% of the issues that need to be solved that affect everything else. So it's really important to not just get into the task, and your people will tend to, they'll tend to gravitate towards the task side of it. And as a leader, you need to get them to, you know, take a look at the, take a look at the bigger picture and tell the truth about the bigger strategies and how that will affect everything else. You know, if I'm, as an example, you know, if I'm talking to my team and I know that we've got to have more sales, and they're talking about, you know, we've got to get the flyer correct or something like that, they're in the weeds, I've got to, you know, lift them up and say, let's keep our eye, you know, guys, let's keep our eye on the ball here, and let's have a narrow focus on new client acquisition, right? And so let's, you know, let's talk about the one thing we need to do to smooth out new client acquisition so it goes better and it's easier to achieve. And and then that takes them off the tasks and kind of in the weeds kind of stuff.
That's a really good point. I was just coaching a client the other day, and they said he was complaining that his staff gets so caught up in the what ifs and they lose focus on the bigger picture. Well, what if this happens? What if that happens? What if this happens? What if that happens? And I said to him, and you might, I would love your perspective on this, Scott, because I said to him, well, why don't you have them write out all the what ifs and the solutions to the what ifs? Like they're bringing up the what ifs, then what's the solution to the what ifs? What if that happens? What would you do? You tell us what you do.
So I've succeeded and I failed in that, in that endeavor. Can I tell you how I failed one time?
Sure. Yeah, sure.
So you know, they're talking about the what ifs, and I tried to use the method you're talking about. I was like, okay, let's write out, you know, what's the solution. And then I got a little bit, then I went more into the weeds, because then they got more into the weeds. And so what I started to do to help myself get out of that was I said, you know, we can do the what if, but let's examine if that what if is actually true and how often that would be true. And if this is really a major issue or if it's just a distraction to our focus. And so this is where the long-term leader method I talk about in the book comes in. It's let's take a look at if this is really a problem or an issue, or if it's more of a distraction. Not that it's not valid. Don't get me wrong. I'm sure it's valid. And I'm sure what you're talking about is real, but is it that important, you know, in the overall scheme of things?
Well, that kind of ties into the next approach, the next issue that you approach in the book is staying problem focused rather than outcome focused is like a cancer that seeps into your mind. Talk to us about that.
Well, that's where you, you know, that's where you have to show up with, and, you know, I think it's a cadence of just training over time where you just kind of set some rules and you say, listen, guys, you know, I realize there's going to be problems, but when you come to the table and when we're discussing the problems, would you have already thought maybe of a solution or two or some possibilities that you can bring along with your problem? Because if you haven't thought about the solution and you want us to just solve the, you know, problems for you, then you're not going to be able to grow and get better and become more agile and more valuable to the organization. Because the people that are valuable are not the people that can spot the problems. The people that are valuable are people that spot the problems and have great solutions. And they just need resources or support, or maybe they need to get buy-in from another department or another person on the team, whatever it might be. And that's how you employ the resources of your leaders to, you know, help solve the problem. You can come up with a great plan and your leader will probably go, great, let's do that. What yeah. support can I give you?
Yeah, that's a great point. Scott Agnew is who we're talking to, author of Long-Term Leader. Scott, you also mentioned in the book why collaboration is overrated. Tell me about that, because I actually promote connecting, communicating, and collaborating. But tell me why you think it's overrated. I'm interested in that perspective.
Yeah, well, it's actually not my perspective. My perspective is not that collaboration is overrated, but it's that it's sometimes overused for
okay.
too long.
Got
and
it.
What happens is decisions don't get made because we just keep collaborating and collaborating and collaborating. And there's a point when the leader has to acknowledge everybody's point of view, come up with a blend, right, in terms of a solution, and wrap it up and consolidate it. I think what I'm hearing everybody say from the group is we need to be more efficient at client acquisition. Yes, we all agree on that. Great. So would you guys be okay if we, you know, approached it with A, B, and C? And the key is to say, would it be okay? In other words, when you come up with what you believe is the strategy, it's important that you ask permission from your team if it would be okay to move in this direction. Now, there's a lot of leaders that will disagree with what I just said, but here's the bigger point. When you ask permission, that's how you help people be safe, feel safe. And when people feel protected, right? When they feel protected, that's when they will start to agree with you or disagree agreeably. Mm. And what you need from your team is not a bunch of yes people, right? You need people that feel safe enough to say, well, you're almost right, Scott, but I don't think we should maybe do it that way. Let's try it this way. And that's because they feel protected. They know that you have their back. And when they share their perspective or their idea, it gives you an opportunity to make a new decision after you've already kind of made a decision to move forward with a solution. So it's in that little nuance that you give people the opportunity to tell you what they're really thinking and what's really going on. And if you're a leader, that's gold. That is gold to you.
You know, I love your point that collaboration could be overused. We had a particular governor who will remain nameless. I don't want to bash anybody. But this governor, everything was decision by committee. And so no decision was ever made.
Right.
And, you know, I had inside scoop on this, having worked in county government at the time. And I saw it myself. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, every decision was, well, we'll form a committee. I'm like, and get nothing done. Because it's, you know, it's like, okay. So we're talking with Scott Agnew here, author of Long-Term Leader. And Scott, you know, you have, give us your background. I mean, you actually went through some trials as a young man and really saw yourself as destined for leadership at a very early age, having lost your father when you were just 8 years old. And then you went on to start a real estate brokerage company. So tell us a little bit about that and how that helped you in your leadership.
Well, you know, it's always a combination of people that stepped up and stepped into my life that I didn't even expect. I lost my father, but at the same time, you know, I was, you know, at a young age, you know, I became kind of the father or, you know, husband, if you will, to my mom. Mm-hmm. So I was thrown into, you know, being responsible at a young age. What a great gift, right?
Yeah.
At the time, it sucked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, you know what I mean?
At the time, it didn't feel very good. My gosh. Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, I went on, I got a paper route. You know, we didn't have any money. My mom couldn't, you know, she had no skills. She was a housewife and had no education. And so my dad, when he passed away, we had no life insurance. So we had no money. And it threw me into a spot where I kind of had to go out and bring money into the family. And, you know, I did a couple paper routes. I did some landscaping, cut grass, did whatever I could. And, you know, at the age of 10, I bought my mom a car because she couldn't afford a car. And so, you know, from a very early age, you know, it was all about, you know, responsibility and, you know, being able to help my mom. And I had a brother at the time that was a juvenile delinquent and, you know, all kinds of problems with him. He was off just creating havoc. And my sister was quite a bit older and she was off to college. So it was up to me. And the buck stopped with me, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, I worked so hard, I think, as a young person that I really had so much responsibility on me and stuff that probably helped me become a leader, because I realized at a young age I couldn't do everything myself. You know, I couldn't do it all. So I needed to be around
other
people.
Come on, that's a lot, Scott, for a young kid to take on. That's a lot of responsibility.
Yeah. So I just relish and appreciate people that want to support, you know, others. I just love it. I want to support people in the worst way. And as you know, and so real estate was a very, you know, very good place for me to land, because, you know, we make a difference, right? We help people become homeowners and, you know, I get a little piece of the American dream, so to speak. And, you know, people that own homes are, you know, the percentages are dramatic in terms of their wealth. You know, people that own homes are just more wealthy than people that don't. It's just a fact. So to be able to help that and give people the keys to the home and all that stuff was amazing. And then for some reason, I was more passionate about helping people become great real estate agents and really serving their clients at a high level and helping them be successful, you know, with less time and more focus and better systems. And it just became a passion of mine and it fit. And I started a little real estate company. Me and my partner started a real estate company in 1995. And, you know, it was just a little boutique company outside Phoenix, Arizona. We ended up having about 35 agents. I was doing about 100 million in volume. My partner was doing about 100 million in volume. That's back when the average sales price was about $115,000. So we were doing a lot of transactions and stuff. And then we also had a group of, you know, 30 plus agents that we were training and helping them with their businesses. And we'd grown this little brokerage. And along comes Keller Williams, and the business model of Keller Williams just fit like a glove with my value system. Back to one of your original questions. And since my values lined up with the values of the company, it was a very easy decision because I knew that we would be in alignment on decisions going forward. It was fantastic. And so within 18 months, we had 250 agents. We grew from 35 agents, 250 agents. We opened Phoenix, Arizona. We were the first real, you know, office in Phoenix, Arizona. From there, I branched off and opened up another couple of offices, and then eventually earned the right to open and develop the state of Utah so that we could, you know, open Keller Williams franchises there. And so today, you know, from nothing, you know, basically I went up to Utah, didn't know anybody, and we have 1,700 agents up there, and we're number one in the market. And we're doing, you know, $6.5-7 billion in volume and just having a lot of fun and helping agents have better lives. So I feel pretty good about, you know, how things have gone. And I love what I do.
Now, congratulations to you and all your success, Scott. Tell us, we have about a minute left with you here on It's Your Community. What else do you want to share with our listeners before we let you go?
I would say just, you know, as you know, step up as a leader. Leaders need to lead from the front of the room, right? And just know that what you have, your years of experience and wisdom do count and do matter. And be willing to take a look at your, you know, your wisdom and your experience, and don't shy away from helping people that you see are, you know, either lost or a little bit maybe, or floundering, or maybe they're just focused on some things they shouldn't focus on. Help them refocus on the important things and show up as a servant to that. With my doctrine is this: it's God first, family, and then business. So when you show up, you know, you feel like almost like I felt like God put his hand on Keller Williams and what we were about and what we were trying to achieve. And it was almost like he just held us in his hands and comforted us along, you know, through everything. And it helped us. The principles of our faith helped us stay true to our mission, which is to, you know, help, you know, our agents have businesses worth owning, careers worth having, lives worth living, and legacies worth leaving. And so that was really, really important to me. And so I would say that to anybody who wants to step up, anybody who feels like they could make a difference, now's the time to start. And why not you? Why not now?
Amen. I'm a God girl, so I appreciate that there, Scott. Thank you so much for joining us and sharing your story with us. The long-term leader, Scott Agnew, joining us here in It's Your Community. Any questions or comments or topics you want me to get to, you can get to me, Vanessa Denha, by going to Epiphany Communications and Coaching. You can also private message me on LinkedIn or Epiphany Communications and Coaching on Facebook. You can follow me on Twitter and on Instagram. And as always, we remind you to connect, communicate, and to collaborate with your community. We'll catch you next time here on It's Your Community.
It's Your Community, a public affairs presentation of News Talk 760 WJR.